Om Shanti. Sister Jenti is the director of Brahma Kumaris in the UK. She's the UN representative for Brahma Kumaris in Geneva. She's probably the best known of all of our senior teachers outside of India, and in India as well. She's one of those that travels the country and gives her time and her life. She's a lovely woman, a wonderful friend, a superb teacher, and someone who, despite whatever else might be happening in her life, today it's a really serious flu, but whatever else is happening, she rises to every challenge and gives of her time absolutely unstintingly and unselfishly. She's very special for all of us. And it's always quite emotional for me to introduce her because I'm extremely fond of her. So I hope you'll all enjoy this time with her and really take the words and, most importantly, the intellectual stimulation and the vibration.
Chidananda Rupa Shiva. Chidananda Rupa Shivoham Shivoham Manobodhiyam Karachitanina Natasro Prajive Natsagrana Netre Natsavyo Na tejo na vayu Chidananda rupa Shivoham Shivoham Chidananda rupa Shivoham Shivoham Na chakrana sakno Navatantra vayu Navasapta datu Navapancha kosha Navakpani padam Natrapasta vayu Chidananda rupa Shivoham Chidananda rupa Shivoham Shivoham Na me dvesha nago Na me lova moho Mado neva me neva Matsavya bhava Na dharmo Charto nakamo na moksha Chidananda rupa Shivoham Shivoham Chidananda rupa Shivoham Shivoham Na punyam na papam Na sakyam na dukha Na mantro na tirtam Na meda na yagna Aham bhojanam neva bhojam na bhokta Chidananda rupa Shivoham Chidananda rupa Shivoham Shivoham Namrotyorna shanka Namejati veda Chidananda Rupa Shivoham Shivoham Aham Nirvikalpo Nirakara Rupo Vibhurya Pya Sarva Prasarvendriyani Sadame Samatva Namuktir Nabanda Chidananda Rupa Shivoham Shivoham Chidananda Rupa Shivoham
Shanti. Good morning. How many of you are familiar with this word, Shiva? I expected that as we are approaching the last couple of days of the retreat, it wouldn't be a new word for you. But I want to explain what this word means. The word Shiva means the seed. The word Shiva means the point. And most of all, the word Shiva means the benefactor. And so the one who has only benevolence and exists for giving benefit to others. But also the point. And by now you're very, very aware that the focus of our meditation is the point of light. The soul is a point of light, but the Supreme Being also the point. And also the seed. And when we talk about the seed, then there's also the connection that there might be a tree that's involved. And in most traditions where there's belief in God, they would say that God is the creator. And so the seed from which creation emerges. And yet we also hear this idea that God is eternal, souls are eternal. And I also want to introduce the idea that matter is eternal. And so there isn't an actual date of creation of souls, or of earth, water, fire, ether, space, etc., etc. But right from the beginning of time, these have always existed. God has existed, soul has existed, and the world has existed. A very different concept to evolution, and that's okay. If you're left with something to chew in your mind, that's fine. But definitely this word eternal comes in all our traditions. And so a date of beginning and a date of ending doesn't quite fit with this concept of eternal. And the one way in which you can describe eternity graphically is as a circle, a cycle. And so linear time with a starting and an end. Very different to this idea that time is actually linear, cyclical. And it takes a lot of shifting in one's own consciousness to come to not just the awareness of this, but the acceptance of this. But think about seeds and trees, and which came first. Where did the seed come from? Where did the tree come from? And so you can see that seeds and trees, they have a connection which is an eternal, cyclical connection. And so not that at some point of time, somebody suddenly created some seeds. But no, seeds have existed, and out of them came trees, and out of the trees came more seeds. And so God the Supreme, the Eternal Being, and the creation, always, always in existence, the seed. The seed, the soul for this tree, this human body. And God the seed of the whole tree of humanity. And just as we think about a cycle, no beginning, no end, so too the analogy of seed and tree is also no beginning and no end. And certainly in the group that I was in yesterday, when we were talking about karma, there were various questions, and I pointed out that it's the age of darkness, and yet it's also the age of transition. And what lies ahead is the dawn, the day, the beginning. And I want to convey that idea today through the analogy of the tree. The seed, powerful, and out of that powerful seed comes the trunk, and out of that trunk at a particular point come branches. And at first the branches are really strong. And then the branches divide and subdivide and carry on dividing. And the tree carries on growing. And by now it's no more major branches that are emerging. It's just twigs. But also, there comes a point when the tree gets a little bit old and you begin to see that it's now not flourishing as it used to. You see that it's a little bit in a state of decay, and it's inevitable that after a period of decay, the tree actually dies, but not before the flowers, the fruits, and the seeds have emerged. The new seeds have already emerged, and they're already there to be able to create the new tree before the old tree finally gives up and finishes. In terms of this analogy, where do you think we are at now? In terms of human history, the trunk, the big branches, the little twigs, the decay. Where do you think we're at now? Who thinks we're at that point where it's the trunk, solid, stable, steady? The branches? Very solid, very strong, able to support many, many leaves. Anyone think we're there? Lots of twigs? Or is it the period of decay? I'll wait a moment for translation, because there's usually a momentary time lag. I'll repeat the question. Who thinks that the period we are at now, in terms of the analogy of the tree, that we are in that state of decay? Okay. I agree with you. All the things that should be supporting us somehow have become a little bit decayed and chaotic, in the sense that religion used to support us, and the big branches that appeared, they've had such strength that they've supported humanity for 2,000 years, 2,500 years, or 250, or 1,000 years, a long, 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 long time. Even the religions that appeared 500 years ago, they're still strong and supporting. But the ones that appeared 2,500 years ago, or 2,000 years ago, they don't have that strength to be able to actually support any longer. And I'm not talking about one particular religion, I'm talking generally about all the religions. Because the way this analogy works, just as with a cycle, a very simple statement explains it. You start with available energy and you go through entropy, a gradual loss of power, and you come to the end of the cycle and no more energy. You start with order and you end up with chaos. And then there's an influx of energy needed to restore order once again from the state of chaos. And in terms of the tree, when you have the foundation being laid, you have the roots, deep, strong, solid, then you have the trunk, and the trunk is a time of total harmony and unity. And it's a time that's been remembered in all the different stories of humanity, not just in the scriptures, but also just in legends and myths and memory. When there's a universal story that exists in the whole of humanity, to me it's saying that there's some truth there. And so all cultures, all civilizations speak about dream time, utopia, a golden age, Atlantis, different terms that they will use in their different scriptures, but definitely a period when everything is working in harmony. The human soul is in harmony with itself, first and foremost. Harmony has to begin in here. And then there's harmony amongst people. And there's even harmony between humans and nature. There's been stories and poetry and legends written about this particular time when people could communicate just with a glance of their eyes. They didn't need to speak too much. They were able to understand each other. The reason being that there was total purity, so it was easy to be transparent. Today, do you want somebody to know what's going on in your mind? Probably not. There's all sorts of stuff going on. And I'd rather that people don't know what's going on in my mind. And so to communicate with the mind is quite a challenge. Yes, maybe I want to be able to communicate with one individual or two individuals at the most with my mind, that I don't want to communicate with everyone with my mind. I don't want them to know what's going on. But a time when souls are so completely pure that they're totally transparent. And so whatever thought that comes is a very pure, benevolent thought, a thought that's filled with nothing but truth and goodness. And so when there's a communication through the eyes, through the glance, it's beautiful. It's a very, very sweet exchange. And then, when there is a need to say a few words, those few words are melodious. They're not harsh. The words are also part of harmony. It's a symphony. It's not chaos and a clanging. And when there's movement, the movement has such grace that it's almost like a dance. And so, as I say, stories and myths and legends and poetry, we've heard all of those things. Is there anyone who's never read or heard of such a time? Everyone's scriptures or history has some indication of such a time. And in India they call such a world Sat Yug, the age of truth, which is a very beautiful term. I love that term. When they speak about Shiva, about God, they describe God as the one who's the truth, the benevolent and the beautiful being. And so that first creation that emerges from the seed, from God, the story of Adam and Eve, the first creation, and it's a very beautiful creation that's filled with truth and is a total reflection of the qualities of God. And so these beings are the divine beings, and in our scriptures or stories, we even call them gods and goddesses with a little g. God, the one, the supreme, different, but divine virtues in all of these beings. A time of great abundance where you don't need to work hard. You sprinkle a few seeds and they take root and there's wonderful harvest that comes. And so nature is serving. Nature is cooperating. So not just harmony of human hearts and minds, but harmony between people, but also harmony between humans and nature. So that nature offers up its best to serve human beings, because there is such beauty and truth in those human beings. And so it's a relationship of cooperation and love. The human beings will respect nature and all forms of life, but equally, nature will offer its abundance. Do you know, even in the 14th century, and that's fairly recently, not that long ago, compared to the story I'm sharing now, there are diaries of Vasco da Gama, and in that he's writing of his travels, and he's writing about India, and he's saying that nobody keeps their doors locked, and when a stranger comes to the village and he asks for a glass of water, he's offered a glass of milk instead. Now, today, 21st century. You don't want to say hello to a stranger. Never mind offer them anything. Because you don't know what's in their mind. You don't know what their motives are. They may well be carrying a bomb in their bag. And that's happened so often. But also, who keeps their doors open? Not many people in many parts of the world anymore. I know that in England, when I was growing up as a child, we weren't so bothered about security. Yes, we did lock the door. But the milkman used to leave a pint of milk, a pint of orange juice outside the door, and it would sit there for several hours, and the climate was cool, and so global warming hadn't yet started, and so the milk stayed fresh by the end of the day when you came home from work and you were able to take in the bottle of milk. Today, if you leave an empty bottle on your doorstep in London, it'll be gone. Really? Probably. So, I've seen things change in front of my eyes in my lifetime, and I may be old, but not that old. But imagine a world which was the age of truth, where truth governed everything. And so nature shared its abundance. And another description of that world is that everything was available. Whether you wanted food, whether you wanted grain, what the fruits, it was nature's bounty and it was available. And again, just in Dadi Janki's lifetime, you've met Dadi Janki, she's 97. So around 1918, 1920, she's talking about that era, just 100 years ago. And she says how they had orchards, they had farms in their family. The money they earned came from the jewelry business. But whatever was the produce of the land, they did not sell. The first share of the produce each morning went to the sages and saints who lived on their grounds. There were huts built for them. The next lot went to the animals. The next lot went to the children. And then finally, the adults would eat. And yet still, there was more remaining. And that was just given away to the villagers. It wasn't sold. 100 years ago. And so to think about nature offering its bounty with abundance isn't such a strange story. But the important thing was the trunk. The truth, absolutely straight and clear. No need for any type of mixture or fudging or anything. But not just the relationships that I've described, but also each one absolutely content in whatever it is they were doing. How many people are content today? They may have plenty, and only those who are yogis will actually know about contentment, but most others, always a thought, more, more, more. And if I don't have enough, of course there's going to be the thought, more, more, more. I read something very interesting the other day, and it was how poverty impairs human decision making. And it's true, isn't it? Where there's a lack, you don't think clearly. And this was research that was done not just in India, but also in America. You don't think about poverty in America, but it's the reality of life today. Or even in England, it's the reality. You have those who have and those who don't have, everywhere. And so the interesting research was, where there's poverty, the decision making is impacted and people are not able to make proper decisions because their first concern is survival, which I understand completely. But once survival has been guaranteed, there's sufficient, then after that, there's no difference in terms of decision making, but you have just enough, or you have a little bit more, or you have a huge amount that's more. No difference in the capacity for decision making after that. But a world where everyone, whether it's the rulers, the subjects, whoever it is, everyone is content. A oneness that existed. And doesn't matter whether it's a kingdom and a king and a queen and subjects, but the feeling of one family together, everyone happy and content. But nothing lasts forever, and the tree grows, and it's no more just a stable trunk. Then it's time for the tree to grow, and there's branches that come out. And the different branches that come from the seed, God, in the tree of humanity, are the different traditions, the different religions. And so you have Buddhism, you have Judaism, you have the path of sannyas, you have Christianity, you have Muhammad, Islam, and all of this happens within that next phase. And the branches are so incredibly strong that they support humanity for thousands of years. You know, there's an expression that we don't agree with anymore because it's not true anymore. But it says, religion is might. But yes, at that time, when things have changed from that wonderful state of paradise and souls have fallen into a state of ignorance, from that moment on, we need God, we need the support of religion. In that first half period, when it's the trunk, religion is a way of life. And in fact, even today, in India, the word dharma doesn't just mean religion, it means a way of life. Dharma also means dharana, the qualities with which you lead your life. And so all three translations of this word dharma. And this change, this switch that happens when then you begin to have these branches and you need to have God come into your life very specifically, it's very interesting. This again has been described in the Indian scriptures as the deities falling from grace. That's the expression that's used. And then within the Abrahamic religions, you have the story of the Garden of Eden, and then you take a bite of the tree of the apple from the tree of knowledge. Now just think about it. Surely knowledge is good. So why would they have been told? So why would they have been told, don't eat this apple? Because there's two types of knowledge. There's the knowledge of the spirit, soul, and then there's the knowledge of the physical, the body, matter. And in the period which is the age of truth, the golden age, the silver age, that half period, there's knowledge of the spirit, and the spirit governs and all is well. Matter is very much there, but it's mind ruling matter. It's spirit ruling matter. And then, as the energy of the soul has been used, it comes to this point where it's now at a critical point. Half its energy is lost. And there's a switch of consciousness. And in that switch of consciousness, matter takes over. And the first thing that appears on the scene is I, the ego. In spiritual awareness, it's one family, we. But in awareness of the body, matter, materialism, just beginning, at that moment it's I. And as soon as there's ego, greed and attachment and lust and anger, all these follow very, very quickly. And so the knowledge of the body, and there's the banishment from the Garden of Eden. I believe that God is benevolent, always, 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 forever. And so it's not God who banishes us from anywhere, but we ourselves, as we shift our consciousness into matter and we forget about the soul, we fall into pain. And in our pain, we cry out to God. And so different religions emerge at that moment. Within that space in which there is the golden age, by now they've moved so far away from truth that they start worshipping God, creating images of God. The first image that's created of God is actually not so far from the truth. It's a diamond. And it's a diamond that's suspended by magnetic energy, so there's nothing visible holding it in place. And this is a story of a temple in Gujarat called the Somnath Temple. I've not been to Somnath, but I'm told that, yes, if you want to visit it, fine, but I'm told that it's nothing of the glory that it used to have a few thousand years ago. And you wouldn't know that this was that very beautiful temple. But the Lord of Nectar, Somnath, very beautiful translation, the Lord of Nectar. And that's the history that's been written. This diamond image that represented God as a being of light. And of course it was later broken into pieces and a part of it has become the Kohinoor diamond. But that's just a tiny bit, a fragment of the original diamond that was the memorial of God. And then, of course, other memorials. But where there's this situation of many, many ideas about who is God, where is God, then you have Buddha coming on the scene and Buddha saying, I'm not going to comment about God. But the most important thing is to be able to understand yourself, understand your mind, to be able to follow the middle path of truth, to be able to have non-violence, to be able to maintain a path which causes no harm to anyone. And it offers a way to be able to be free from sorrow. I'm sure there are people who are here from a Buddhist background, and please forgive me if I'm being too simplistic about Buddhism. But in two sentences, this would be the message. There's no denial of the existence of God, but there's no further information given. More, it's just simply a philosophy to be able to deal with the trials and tribulations of life that have started already. That's on the east, on the western front, you have Abraham and the message there. Stop worshipping idols. You're going to get into trouble. Remember God. Remember the one who doesn't have a physical form. And then of course later, the commandments for life. Just a little while ago, young people were asked to name the 10 commandments. 8% of the population of Britain were able to name the 10 commandments. I'm not surprised. People really don't bother anymore. Even in a land that's a Christian country. But it's not really something that's taken in the sense of governing our lives anymore. So, but we are given commandments to be able to live a life that's going to be following at least God's instructions, to the sense that we lead a good life to whatever extent. And then you have people like Shankaracharya in India, the great teacher, and there's huge extravagance and nonsense going on. And so he comes and he shows the path of total renunciation, very much needed at that point to inspire people. And then you have the path of Christianity that comes in, and where Judaism has been explaining the law and laws governing everything about human life and relationships, etc., etc. Now it's time to focus on love. And so the message of Christ, the message of love. All of the messages of the laws, the Old Testaments are accepted, but the important ingredient, the message of love. And then you get people getting caught up within that personality. And so again, within that same region, another message. And the message again is, there are no images. There cannot be any images. Just focus on the one who is the creator, the one who is the almighty, the one who is up above. And so, again, the attempt to draw attention back towards God instead of the messenger. But you know how human nature is. We forget the message and we focus on the messenger. And so the need then for the message of Islam once again, one, forget about everything else. And so this period, which we would describe as a period of the Copper Age, the time for these big branches which till today serve the world, laying down their beliefs, their precepts, their conditions, explaining things that we need to do in our life to be able to have a good life. And the tree continues to grow. And meanwhile, each one of these branches finds itself splitting. Two branches, and then out of the two branches, many, many little twigs coming up. And the tree carries on growing, and you have the final period of the tree. Every single religion divided into many, 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 many different groups, many twigs. And so the power of that religion, no longer able to support people in the way it did at the beginning, but also the branch had a very direct connection with the seed, with the roots. The twigs, now the twigs are so far away, even from the branch, and then the branch so far away from the seed, that it becomes a situation of following scripture, following ritual, but actually no real connection with the seed any longer. I'll speak about Hinduism, because I was born into that. Most Hindus, I would go as far as saying 99% Hindus, would say that when they try to connect with God, when they try to sit in remembrance of God, their mind wanders. They're not able to make contact. They can sometimes feel the presence of God in their life. Sometimes they can feel God protecting them, guiding them even. But when they want to connect with God and have a living, real relationship with God, it doesn't happen. Mother Teresa, in her diaries that were discovered after her departure, "I'm doing so much for humanity, and yet I feel very far away from God." The situation at the end of the tree, that even people who are revered and people who've given their life to the service of humanity will make a statement like this. And whichever tradition you belong to, or no tradition, you know that this is the way things are. God and I, very, very far apart. Let's just have a few moments of silence. And you've been given a very simple introduction to God. I, the soul, connecting with God, the Supreme Soul, the Divine Being. Let's have a few minutes of connecting, because 12 o'clock is usually our time for traffic control, so we'll create our traffic control. Sitting quietly. I, the soul, aware of my own eternity, detach from the consciousness of the body and connect with the Supreme. Shiva, the seed, the benefactor, the protector, the compassionate one. God's love, God's light reaches the soul. God's love cleanses me, purifies me, and uplifts me. God's love heals the soul. And the soul is able to let go. Of the stories and the memories that cause pain. The soul am now filled with gratitude for all that I have received from the Divine. God has blessed me with peace in my heart, love, and opened my intellect so that I begin to have a glimpse of truth. God gives me the power with which to be able to move forward with understanding so that I may reach my destination of truth. God's love reaches out and touches human hearts . God's love touches nature. So that nature returns to a state of calm and order. God's love transforms the world. Holding this connection with God, keeping this love and gratitude in my heart, my thoughts return to the physical dimension. And the moment here and now, Om Shanti. So the state of the tree in the Iron Age, big, but no connection with the seed. And so the tree drying out without any strength, in a state of decay. Lots and lots of visible signs of that. And I don't just mean in terms of religion, but everything. But the seed appears before the tree dies. And so God comes to give us knowledge so that as a result of knowledge, we're able to make connection with the seed, the Creator, once again. And our connection with the seed transforms us. But not only is it a personal transformation, we become the roots, the foundation of the new tree. The ugliest part of the tree are the roots. Not very pretty. And so, nothing visible that's attractive. They're underground, but they're the most important, because they are the foundation of the new tree. And so, the incognito work we do inside, the transformation we're able to have for ourselves internally, and the service we do of others to bring them closer to God so that they too may have that connection of truth, and they too become that network of roots. This is the period we're going through at the present time. What is actually happening is something which is the most important out of the whole period of history. We are laying the foundation for the new tree. It has many, many repercussions in the decisions we make about time, money, energy, skills, how do we use all the resources that we have. But it all starts by my understanding. If you try to water the leaves of the tree, you can carry on, but nothing much is going to happen. But if you water the roots of a tree, especially the roots of a new sapling that is totally invisible at this point, what you're doing is actually helping in that establishment of the new world. Many people across the world understand that this is what is going on, but it's quiet. It doesn't hit the newspapers. Scandals hit the newspapers. And so when people say to me, you've been in London for 40 plus years and we've never heard of you, I say, good. Which organizations have you heard about that hit the press? The ones that are caught up in scandals. That's it. You don't hear about the good things that are happening. So if you've never heard of us, fine. But the way we get known is word of mouth. Somebody's benefited, their brother, their sister, their husband, their wife, they come. Somebody's benefited, their colleagues at work, their friends come. But that network, and it's across the world, and I don't just mean the Brahma Kumaris, the people who understand that this process of transformation within is the transformation of the world. It's not by waving banners and shouting slogans that a new world is created. That's part of the chaos of the old world. The new world is created with yoga, the power of the connection with God. God is the creator of the new world, but the invitation to all of us is to be co-creators with God. I have a choice of how I use my thoughts, my time, my money, my skills, my relationships, everything that I have, all that I know. I can use it now for the creation of the new world. So, it's a big story. Needs a lot of thought, personally. But most of all, it needs for you to connect and experiment with yoga power, experience yoga power. And as you see the transformation, you will begin to understand more and more. Thank you for listening patiently. And I'm sure that there's 1,000 questions. But I would suggest that you don't ask questions. Normally, within our organization, we encourage questions. But at this point, I would suggest that you hold your questions and focus on the experience of connecting with the seed and experiencing what is yoga power. Om Shanti.